All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com, Week 9 edition. Bobby Fenton with you, and we are unfortunately talking about a 4-4 football team after the Bucks drop a heartbreaker to the Falcons this past Sunday, and we get ready for Monday Night Football for the second time in 3 weeks as the Bucks travel to Arrowhead. It'll be Bucks Chiefs Monday night at 8:15. So nothing gets easier, and it's one reason why it was so important to have that game Sunday. And we're not going to sugarcoat it today on the Free Stretch, okay? That was a really, really big loss. And in tandem, the two Atlanta games, I don't care which one it was, they absolutely had to get one of them, in my opinion. I said that beforehand. They blew the Thursday nighter, which they should have won. And, you know, there was a lot of things they could have done differently. There was also some help from the officials in that one with the missed face mask call. Didn't go their way. Okay. Coming back home to Tampa against them. Same team. 3 weeks later. Got to have that one now instead. And the Bucks, I'm not going to say they laid an egg because they didn't. But too many mistakes. Too many chances that they let go by the boards. And ultimately, just not quite good enough. And again, some help from the officials on the Kyle Pitts fumble at the goal line. But even that was after a play where he roasted the Bucs secondary again. It all added up to a 31-26 loss. And even worse than that, it adds up to a one-game deficit in the NFC South. And even worse than that, no season tiebreaker now. No matter what the Bucs do, they have to actually outpace Atlanta by a game to win the division. I'm assuming New Orleans and Carolina aren't going to be part of the mix. But hey, the Bucks may not be either. We'll see. And it's not over. I know I tweeted, if you follow me on Twitter, at Bobby Game Day, BobbyGameDay, at Bobby Game Day. I was at the game Sunday, and I was tweeting from my phone, like in my seat, a few times. And I think one of the things I said, I didn't pull anything down. You know, a lot of it's heat of the moment. A lot of it's overreaction. I'll be the first to admit, just like any other fan, I can be that way. I think one of the things I said was, this game is over, and now this season is over because XYZ, I don't remember what I was talking about, it was some certain play. Although I was wrong, the game wasn't over. The Bucks actually ended up with a chance to win with the ball in their hands at the end of the game. But either way, what I said at the time was not entirely true. I don't think it's over. And here's the one saving grace I have. We talked about how the Ravens loss was so bad for so many reasons, not just because of the Godwin injury, but because the realization of what this defense really is hit us, and it reared its ugly head again on Sunday. So I don't know if the Bucs are good enough to even be, like, sometimes you ask yourself, hey, what is it we really think could happen? You know, we get all excited and we root for these things and we take these losses to heart. Oh man, what woulda, shoulda, coulda been. Sometimes you step back and you're like, you know what? What are we thinking is going to happen? Are they going to win the South, go on a run through the playoffs, make the NFC divisional round like last year, make the NFC championship game? You know, even if they had, let's say they caught that Hail Mary on Sunday at the end of the game and they won the game and they were a game ahead of Atlanta and there wasn't a tiebreaker, all that stuff. It wouldn't change anything. I'm watching this defense and it's hard to see a path forward to the real deep parts of the year, which is supposed to be the point of all that. Now, I'm not saying they can't make a run. Here's the one saving grace. Here's the one saving grace when I look at things. They have played one of the toughest, it might be the toughest, but they've played one of the toughest schedules in the NFL. 8 games, and all but one of them have been against quality opponents. And then they had the Saints game in there. But the Commanders, who we thought were really bad when the Bucks beat them on the opening game, ended up being they're one of the top teams in the league right now. The Eagles, who the Bucks destroyed, are pretty good. That Denver loss was bad, of course, but it wasn't as bad as you think. Denver's pretty good, and the Bucks were in a letdown spot. Detroit, Atlanta twice, obviously Baltimore. All right, it's been like going 4-4 against that schedule doesn't mean you're bad. Like these are playoff teams. Like you're not any good team, even a Super Bowl team, is going to feast on the underbelly of the league, get all those wins racked up against bad teams, and then just kind of hold their own or tread water against the really good ones. So, I mean, 4-4 doesn't mean you're bad against this slate. And they've got two more. They just have a really tough schedule. Kansas City, San Francisco, who's better than their record, although they got a nice win against the Cowboys. And then you get the bye week, and after that, it really does get easier. You've got Carolina twice, another one against New Orleans, the Raiders, the Giants. Like, it really does get easier. So, if you're, and I'm not, it's too hard to play the let's project records game, but at 4-4, if you figure you want to go 10-7, that's 6-3 in these next 9 games. If they could figure out a way somehow to get a win in one of these next 2 weeks, and if you could choose one or the other, honestly, you'd choose San Francisco because that's an NFC team, so conference record, which is a tiebreaker, would fall into that one. The AFC losses hurt you the least. But anyway, point is, if they could just find a way to get to the bye week at 5-5, I'm not sure they can do it. I think they can do it. I'm not sure they're going to be able to do it. But if you do that, then you can go 5-2 against the final 7 games of this schedule. The Bucs can absolutely do that, and they'll have Mike Evans back. But man, it just really, really would have been nice to get one of those Atlanta games. Not even asking for a lot. Just get one of those. But instead, they're going to have to try and play catch-up the rest of the year. And, I mean, you know, we don't even know if they're equipped to do it. It was a really disappointing performance defensively the other day. And listen, some guys did some good things. And I'll give the defense at least this much. In the second half, you know, Atlanta had 24 points at halftime. In the second half, they only had a touchdown. They gave the Bucs a chance to get back in the game. But overall, still just too many mistakes, too many guys covering grass. Like we talked about last week, this zone defense, the Buccaneers, you know, have guys standing in one spot. Receivers are in other spots near those spots, but nobody actually covers the man. They're just covering area, and there's the middle of the field is just wide open. And listen, I'm not trying to scapegoat KJ Britt here, okay? But of all the injuries the Bucs have had that we talk about, Chris Godwin, you know, obviously Mike Evans this week too. And then even ones they've had earlier in the year with Kancey missing the first few games, Antoine Winfield Jr. when he was out. For as flashy as those names are, honestly, Servasia Dennis, that might be the biggest injury that the Bucs have had to deal with this year. Because they used to put him in there on passing downs at the very least. They'd platoon him and Britt. And Britt, he's a good run thumper. I mean, it's not that he's not a good player, and I'm not trying to pin all this on him, but he is really exposed in pass coverage. And with the injury to Servasia Dennis, they don't really have a guy right now who they can platoon in there that isn't really any different than KJ Britt. Like, they're all in the same mold as KJ Britt. Like, they don't have a guy who is a different type of athlete who maybe is a little better in coverage, that type of thing. And the only guy they have is Levi Jones. He's on the practice squad. And Todd Bowles addressed this earlier in the week, said he's really the only guy that would be a change of pace from what we're already doing. And they say he doesn't know the defense well enough yet. So they're in that boat. And again, not about Britt. Britt's, see, there's using people the right way and there's people not doing their jobs. KJ Britt is not doing his job. He's just not being used the right way all the time, but they need him in there. They don't have anybody else. So don't jump all over him. You know, it's not, sometimes people just aren't being used the way they're meant to be used. And in his case, he's being asked to do something that's not his thing. But like I said, it ain't just him, man. They were getting toasted in the back end too. Bad angles. Levante David didn't have his best game. Merriweather got lit up on one. The first one to Pitts was Merriweather, I believe. And then you had Funderburk, who had to get replaced halfway through the game. It was a whole defensive effort, or lack thereof. And it was schematic. It was physical. Sometimes, I mean, look, I know everybody's mad at Todd Bowles. Hey, he's the coach, and he's a defensive coach. And look at what our defense is. So, how can he be the head coach anymore? Are people want him fired, this, that, and the other? Sometimes, guys, and I'm not saying the scheme is perfect, but I'm not going to pretend that I'm some defensive mastermind that can see something the coaches can't see either. I'm a podcast host. But you know what sports is? That it's very, very, like, when you boil it down, the very crux of it, you have to win one-on-one battles. You have to be across from a guy and win and beat him and be better than him on that play, on that rep. And that is not happening nearly often enough with the Buccaneers defense, okay? Sometimes they're just flat out getting beat, whether it's because they're not good enough or personnel-wise, we don't have what we thought we had, whatever it is, you know, and some of it is on the coaching, but you got to go out there and win a one-on-one battle and beat the guy across from you, and it's just not happening enough right now for the Bucs defense. Kirk Cousins, okay, he's got 14 touchdowns this year. They've played 8 games. 8 of the 14 touchdowns, he's got 8 touchdowns in 2 games versus the Buccaneer defense, and just six in the other six games, okay? And, I mean, that's unconscionable. And every single quarterback that you go out there and see, Lamar Jackson looked, everybody's like, Lamar Jackson, this is him in his final form. This is as good as it gets when they're playing the Bucs on Monday night. And I'm thinking to myself, I mean, he's really good. But it's like, you all know that you have to judge him against something other than the Bucs defense, because everybody's got their easiest night of the year, it seems like, right now, against the Buccaneers. And so the offense isn't absolved on Sunday. 26 points is enough to win, and Todd Bowles even said that. But those turnovers, listen, Baker Mayfield, not perfect. His turnovers have been a big part of this. It's hurting the Buccaneers right now, okay? In fact, teams this year without forcing a turnover, like the Bucs didn't on Sunday, are 20-51, although you could argue that safety, it doesn't count statistically as a turnover, but that should have been a turnover, a fumble that goes out the back of the end zone. Teams with a plus three or better turnover ratio, which the Falcons had on the Buccaneers, 14-1. The Bucs had three total turnovers the first 4 weeks of the year, and they were 3-1 in those four. They've had nine since then, and they were 1-3 in those four. So that's making a difference too. The flea flicker, hey, not a great call, I don't think. I know some people are saying there was nothing wrong with the call. I didn't think it was necessary. Bucs offense was moving the ball. Bucs offense moved the ball all day. But even if you call it, that's fine. But Baker's got to pull that in. It was never there. Although, again, I had a problem with them running it to the short side of the field instead of the long side. But still, just it was never there. Nobody ever took the cheese on the flea flicker, and there was no reason to throw it. The other one, going into the end zone in the fourth quarter, I believe it was a play that was open. If he throws it with some arc over the shoulder of the receiver, I think he was looking for Shepard, if I'm not mistaken, and he throws him open where Shepard runs underneath it and goes and get it. It's a touchdown. Instead, he tried to put it in a tight window. It got picked off. The Rashad White fumble hurt on the opening drive, and the Falcons got points there to open the game. And then the fake punt, which also does not count statistically as a turnover. That's like a turnover, and that's something they should have checked out of. Although, again, I don't even know why they did that. I love going for it. It's 4th-and-3. Just go for it. Like, send your offense on the field and go for it. You don't have to do anything fancy like that. And a fake punt, and it's, you know, the look wasn't there. Only touchdown of the second half was on that fake punt that got botched. Falcons have a short field. They go and score. But even with it all, I mean, the offense moved the ball all day long. Like, they really did a good job, I thought. I was impressed. Bucky Irving lit it up early in the game. The snap count, the final snap count for the three running backs, Rashad White 41, Bucky 31, and Tucker 7. And I've seen criticism like, oh, you know, Bucky never got the ball back, and he didn't. He was lighting it up in the first half. They were chanting his name. I was in the cheap seats at RJS. I was over in the corner, the southwest corner, section 302, or no, section 316, excuse me. I was over there, and everybody's going, Bucky, Bucky, Bucky. And love what he did. Then they got behind, and Rashad White didn't have a bad game either. And Todd Bowles said he's a little bigger back. He's a little bit better in chipping, in pass pro, and that type of thing. And when you're down, you're throwing a lot more. And Tucker, same thing. I mean, he only got 7 carries. I know Rick Stroud, who is a friend and the Bucs beat writer for the Tampa Bay Times, he's over there on Twitter, and he said, you know, this is a guy who was the NFC Offensive Player of the Week a couple weeks ago, and how do you only get him 7 touches? Listen, the Bucs have a surplus at a position that it's actually not great to have a surplus at. It's not a premium position to begin with. And they've got 3 really trustworthy guys, and you just simply don't need that many. Honestly, I wish we had a surplus at some other position offensively or defensively, because there's only 1 football, and all 3 guys are strong in different ways, and all 3 guys deserve probably more of a chance they're getting, but certainly Bucky and Sean Tucker do. But I also get it. I mean, you could say, hey, we're going to ride Bucky. He's the guy the whole game. Maybe a couple touches here for Rashad White here and there. And there wouldn't be anything wrong with that. But, I mean, I get the way it is with the Bucs offense when it comes to the running game. But the running game as a whole did a good job. Bucs are averaging 5.1 yards per carry this year. That would be most in franchise history. And just if you look at all the different numbers, there's so many different numbers. This was in the Sage, Ira Kaufman's column on Joe Bucs Fan today, posted. Go to joebucsfan.com and check it out. Still, after all that's happened, Bucs are 7 points behind the highest scoring team in the league. That's the Ravens. Bucs rank 2nd in first downs, second in passing yards, third in completion percentage. Baker Mayfield's got more touchdown passes than anybody in the NFL with 21. The running game is not at the top of the league, but it's much better. They're 16th in rushing attempts, right in the middle, but 9th in rushing yards, so that's a sign of efficiency. Like I said, 5.1 yards per carry. They're converting on third downs over 50%, 52.5. The team record is 47.1, and that was in 2021 with Tom Brady. Their third in red zone efficiency. It's not like, oh man, they're moving the ball, but they're just not closing out drives. No, 67.7%. That's touchdowns, not scoring. Touchdowns in the red zone 2/3 of the time when they get inside the 20. That's good. They're not getting behind, averaging 8.8 points in the opening quarter. Number two in the NFL behind Minnesota. They only averaged 2.9 in the first quarter last year. Remember, they couldn't buy a touchdown on the opening drive, and even a field goal was a big deal. Offensive line's been ridiculously good, I think. They've avoided injuries, but Tristan Wirfs is one of the best in the league. Graham Barton, week after week, is putting great tape out there. Cody Mauch had a phenomenal game. Gedeki's been back from his concussion, doing well. I don't think there are very many issues at all. Obviously, the injuries to Godwin and Evans suck, but even with those, I thought guys stepped up and made some plays. I thought Rakim Jarrett made a few plays. I mean, nobody's going to be as good. I don't care who your three receivers are. If you take the top two receivers off of any of the 32 teams, that's a problem, and it's especially when the Bucs have two of the best top two anywhere in the NFL. So I know the turnovers hurt, and they did, and they probably would have won that game if Baker could have avoided maybe just one of those three, certainly two of them, and he'll be the first one to tell you that. But that he'll be fine. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about the defense, and that's the constant. That's the reason to me that they lost the game on Sunday. Above all, there's never just one reason. There's multiple reasons. But if I look back at that game, that's what I feel like did the most damage. And it's going to be something the Bucs have to figure out. They go into this game on Monday night against the Chiefs. And the Chiefs' offense, by the way, is not what it has been. The Chiefs are undefeated, of course. And it's still Patrick Mahomes. But both of these guys, Baker Mayfield and Patrick Mahomes, have 9 interceptions each. And touchdowns are 21-8 for Bake. Mahomes has more interceptions than touchdowns. The Chiefs' offense has been anything but high-flying. They haven't been using their receivers as much. Rashee Rice is out for the year. They've still got Xavier Worthy over there. Travis Kelce is Travis Kelce, but he's not the old Travis Kelce either. And it's something that the Bucs defense, you know, nobody thinks what we've seen on this Bucs defense looks great when you put it up against Patrick Mahomes. I don't care what the numbers they put up have been all season long. I'm just saying, and usually you bounce back off of an effort like that. I'm not going to say the Bucs have no chance. Don't even tune in. Don't even get on the plane. Don't even show up. I'm not going to say that. You know, it's not something that I think the Bucs are a heavy favorite or anything, obviously. But I wouldn't rule out the possibility if the Bucs can eliminate the turnovers and if they can get the running game going and perhaps even just get ahead early, all of a sudden, we might have a ball game on our hands. So again, trying to stay positive, but also realistic. I don't think anything I'm saying is out of the realm of possibility, and see how it goes. But just like I said before, the Baltimore-Atlanta two-game stretch, here we go again with another AFC-NFC stretch as the other Super Bowl team from last year, San Francisco, comes to town next week. If the Bucs can get one of these two, I'd rather it be really San Francisco, because conference record is a tiebreaker for any wild card thing, absent head-to-head. And short of that, man, just find a way. Find a way to get to this bye week at 5-5 somehow. And then I really do think this team can be 5-2 after the bye against the schedule they have, like I mentioned before. 7 of the first 8 were against teams with winning record, likely playoff teams, some of them certain playoff teams. Only 2 of the remaining 9 games are that way. And that includes these two this week. Now, the 49ers don't qualify. They're actually, you know, record isn't, they're better than their record. But yes, only 2 of the remaining 9 games were against teams with a winning record. So, hey, you know what? What's the alternative? You want to sit there and not watch the games and shut it down and say, oh, season's over? I know I said that in the heat of the moment on Sunday. I know. And hey, it was a natural reaction. I was really, really frustrated. Like, I was really excited about the game, really hopeful. I know even with all the injuries, the Bucs have guys out, blah, blah, blah. That was a game the Bucs could have and should have won, and they really needed to, but they didn't. So what now? How are we going to respond? We'll see. And I'll tell you what, I wasn't impressed with how the fans responded on Sunday. Like I said, I went to the game, wanted to take my kids to the throwback game. They had never seen the orange uniforms in person before. Everybody was all geeked up for that Monday night game. Tickets were through the roof. And I get it. Everybody gets excited about Monday night football. Me too. But the bigger game was this past Sunday. And the stadium was about two-thirds full, low energy. It wasn't even like there were a million Falcons fans either. There just wasn't any. It was a lot of no-shows or maybe unsold tickets. I don't know what it was. And the reason I don't go to more games, I'll do a little aside real quick here before I close out the show, and this doesn't have anything to do with football right now. The reason I don't go to more games is because I have a very, very deep-rooted objection to the way ticket sales work now in the secondary market and the way they squeeze people with these fees and artificially inflate the market. Because in the old days, that game on Sunday, you probably would have been able to buy tickets outside for $20 each, maybe $30. In today's prices, I'm saying, but just in under the conditions of the old days. Now, everything's paper. Everything you want to sell, you have to go through either the Bucks with Ticketmaster or StubHub or whatever. There's a million of them. SeatGeek, Vivid Seats, whatever they are. And every one of them absolutely rakes you over the coals, first of all, with fees. That's one thing that bothers me. Is if a fee was like 10%, then fine. But like a $30 ticket becomes $60. Like it's literally almost double. You know, I think tickets were going for $31, $32 as far as the actual price, but you got to click that little button that says show prices with fees, and it goes up to like $59, whatever it is. Number one, there's that. Number two, it's not a natural market. In a natural market, you might go on there on Saturday and tickets are, you know, $70, and then by Sunday morning at 11 a.m., there's still a lot of tickets left. Well, what happens? Well, the price goes down, right? Because there's still a lot. People don't want to eat tickets and they, oh, I have these tickets for 70. They're not moving. Let me move them down to 60 or move them down to 50. They don't do that on these sites. They just stay there. They just stay there. I don't even know how it works. There's something going on because they're on there and then they just disappear at kickoff. And normally, oh, it's kickoff. Prices must be dropping. Now you can probably get in for $20. These guys want to unload whatever inventory is left. But no, there's something with some algorithm or something. I don't like any of it. So I paid $65 per for four tickets. So I ended up paying, what was it, $260. When I guarantee you for four tickets, that would have been $100. Just given the conditions with the fans, with the demand, with the empty seats in the stadium. And it's bullshit, quite frankly. And I don't like giving my money to those places. Now, I'm not going to out and out boycott at all because I still want to go to games. But I'm not going to play the games they play every week. I'm just not going to do that. And like I always tell you, I'm a fan just like you. Occasionally, I'll get a media pass to cover a game, but a lot of the time, I just buy a regular ticket, and that's what I did. And we had a great time. Weather was actually pretty nice for a Sunday 1 p.m. game. It wasn't ridiculously hot or anything like that. And I took my two kids, and my mom came with us, and we all had our orange gear on. And I had, by the way, not just retro stuff you get, no, check out this orange gear we're selling. No. I broke out the gym bag in my garage, and I got my actual hat and my actual game day shirt from 1994 and wore that stuff, the actual stuff. And you can look at, there's pictures I got up there on Twitter, at Bobby Game Day. Like a lot of stain. I probably should have taken better care. I should have hung that shirt in the closet. I just had it tucked away in a gym bag where I keep all my old orange stuff. But now I'm going to wash the shirt and actually hang it so that I can use it for the throwback game year after year. And we had a great time going out there. Either way, though, very unimpressed with the atmosphere, very unimpressed with the crowd, very unimpressed with the energy level. It didn't have that feel. I guarantee you Arrowhead won't have that issue on Monday night. The Bucks are going to have to walk in there in a tough environment, but the fans can't come on the field. The reason Arrowhead is so tough, even though it does have a great crowd and they are loud and all that stuff, the reason Arrowhead is tough is because really, really good teams usually are very, very tough to beat at home. Period. It's not the crowd, it's not the yelling, it's not the bright lights. It's tough to beat a team like the Chiefs anywhere, but teams like the Chiefs on their home field are really tough to beat, period. And so it's going to have, the Bucks have their work cut out for them, but I fully believe that there's at least reason to watch the football game. And I think if the Bucks can cut down the turnovers, you know, this will be an interesting test, honestly, because the offense has done a really good job, like we talked about on the show today. Move the ball up and down the field, both Atlanta games. This Chiefs defense is tough. I'm interested to see what Liam Cohen and Baker Mayfield and this Bucks offense do against the Chiefs defense. Obviously, the side of the ball we're worried about is the other way around. It's a struggling Chiefs offense against a struggling Bucks defense. Of course, you can probably guess which one we think is struggling a little more of those units. But hey, the Chiefs have had their issues too, and they've been far from perfect. So we'll say if the Bucks can't stop anybody on Monday night, then maybe we've been barking up the wrong tree the whole time, and we just don't have it this year. I expect a better effort. This is where your guys like Lavonte David, who didn't have his best game Sunday, but he's still playing at a high level. Antoine Winfield Jr., guys have to step up at corner. Whoever the hell it is, they start opposite of Zion McCollum. I think they're going to go with Josh Smith, perhaps, the guy they picked up and reinstated up the practice squad this week. Off of somebody else's practice squad, I should say. And whatever they got to do and generate more pass rush, that's been a big issue, and that's a big part of why the secondary looks so bad sometimes. Step up, figure some things out this week. And in the meantime, we will be back next week. Win or lose, hopefully we're talking about a 5-4 football team. But either way, Monday Night Football is Monday Night Football. The defending Super Bowl champions are the defending Super Bowl champions. And I can't wait. I think it's going to be fun on Monday night. So enjoy your Halloween. I'm recording this on Thursday. You'll probably not hear this till afterward. But be safe out there, whether it's Halloween tonight or the rest of the weekend. Use Monday night as an excuse to have some friends over. Make a big deal out of it. Have fun. Get some food. All that stuff. Enjoy the football game. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform, the single best place anywhere, TV, internet, or radio, for Bucks coverage. Thanks to you for listening. Email me if you want to, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. I'll be back next week. And in the meantime, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.